from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the Coach's Meeting. Coach to Coach.
Is it the biggest season of change in college football? Let's talk about it with our coaches, Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis, as we begin a new season of Coach to Coach. Doug, you're the historian here in the group. Has there ever been a season of change like this one in college football?
Well, you go back and look. I guess when they went away from the leather helmet, maybe, or maybe the face mask, something recently, certainly 85, 86, when after the lawsuit with Georgia and Oklahoma, where you could be on TV more than one time. But I think when this season's over, guys, at the end of it, we're going to look back and say this historically probably not going to be anything close with everything that is going to be changing. I'm sure, Larry, we're going to get into a lot of that today.
This is massive to me. I mean, I don't know how you want to equate it. You want to say earthquake? You want to say tsunami? This is massive across the nation in college football. And I know in my career, I've never experienced anything like this. You know, the 13 years that I coached in college football, there were always little tweaks and changes. But something like this, I mean, we thought it was a huge deal, you know, when the Southwest Conference was disbanded. This makes that look like nothing.
And, Dave, you put it in context because it has been nothing but change, really, since COVID with NIL, with the transfer portal. All of those things are still at the basis, and we still don't really have our hands around those.
Do not. And I think people were just working their way through it. I know they were. They're just working their way through it on a day-by-day basis. And now, all of a sudden, this hits, and this is a complete reset. Just not only reset mind-wise, it's reset geographically.
That is huge. But then when you throw in first year of a 12-team college playoff, transfer portal, name, image, likeness, still trying to get their arms around exactly how that's going to work, kind of work their way through that. And then it comes out about a few weeks ago that, hey, revenue sharing is going to start taking place less than a year from now. It's going to be an interesting season.
Doug, I'm curious from your conversations with coaches in the game, how are they trying to swallow this elephant that is the change we're dealing with?
Well, assistant coaches are doing this, and smart, rightly so. Hey, that's the head coach's problem. That's the athletic director problem, or more so, that's the head coach's purview on this. But exactly how they're going to do it, I don't think people know. You know, what with this 12-team playoff, how many can you lose? How do you have to win big? So many things that head coaches have to look at. Now, the good part of it is for them, they knew this was coming, and the smart head coaches and the ones that look ahead, they're going to have a plan for all this, and they're going to be able to relate that plan to their assistant coaches down to their coaching staff. But they get paid a lot of money, but they're going to earn it this year.
The SEC and the Big Ten have long been the best in college football. Now they have expanded in a way that likely is going to dominate the sport for the next decade, maybe more. So, guys, as you look at these two conferences, which entering the 2024 season is the better conference?
Well, I think that is not only a subjective, it's an objective question. But let's just compare a little bit. Georgia versus Ohio State. How does that match up? I mean, let's just start at the top and look at that. Texas versus Oregon. Two pretty similar places, right, when you start thinking about it. Alabama versus Penn State. We're talking about the top of the conference now. I think people would agree. Ole Miss versus Michigan, the way they have them ranked right now. How would that play out? LSU versus Iowa. You know, if they were to go head to head. So this it's going to be. I think every weekend it's going to be very, very interesting to see how these two conferences match up. Now, historically, I think if you want to put it into what conference has put the biggest amount of players into professional football, just athletes and recruiting, the SEC. But the Big Ten is kind of catching up to that in this day and age. To me, it's fascinating now.
You can make numbers work about any way you want to make it, but just think about this. Since 2000, since the turn of the century, all right, 7 Southeastern Conference programs now, with Texas and Oklahoma, have won a national championship. Go back 2 years prior to that, Tennessee won one in 98. So 8 of the 16 teams in the last 25 years has won at least one championship, and four of those teams have won multiple championships. Big Ten, on the other hand, they've had three: Ohio State, Michigan, Southern Cal. So that's just part of it. But, you know, I think the Southeastern Conference can comfortably say going into this year, there are more championship ready and actual teams that have won championships in the last 10 to 20 years, more so than the Big Ten.
I guess maybe, Doug, a separator point. It seems like the middle of the conference, of which Tennessee is a part, that feels maybe that the Southeastern Conference has a sizable edge over the Big Ten.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. You can argue, again, going back historically, and then what's been added this year, Ohio State, Michigan, Washington last year was a Final Four team. Oregon was very close. Southern Cal has been a little iffy, but we know where they can be. You could certainly argue the top four or five teams, but I think you're exactly right. You know, and not only throw in the Auburns and the Floridas and the Tennessee, who recently have been a little bit down. You had Ole Miss last year, who lost two ball games. The only games they lost were to Alabama and Georgia, two undefeated teams in the Southeastern Conference. Missouri was 11-2, excuse me, after the bowl game. So, but all that can change. Because now, with the recruiting going on, with two powerful programs, we can see that change.
Well, and the transfer portal has completely been a seismic shift in all of this. But what is going on now, and the SEC has perennially had athletes that would have been stacked up. I think the depth of the SEC and also the SEC being able to play against SEC teams, I mean, that strengthens your team too, and the recruiting aspect of it. But to me, it's gonna start to even out quite a bit, because the Big Ten now, they're going to have a grind. The SEC used to be a grind. It was a grind week to week to week. I think the Big Ten's going to start to be that way too.
This is Coast to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Quick, how can you turn $1 into the chance at winning up to $500? Just add the Quick Cash feature next time you play Tennessee Cash, Daily Tennessee Jackpot, Lotto America, or Cash for Life. It's easy. Simply add Quick Cash for an extra dollar for a chance to win instantly. And don't forget to check your ticket after the drawing to see if you won again. So play Quick Cash today for your chance at some fast money. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
We're getting set for the start of college football season. Doesn't it feel good if you're a fan? Welcome to Coach to Coach. The 12-team playoff will be at the background of everything that happens this year. Doug Matthews, how does this playoff at the end of the season change college football's regular season?
This is an area that coaches have talked about a lot, and essentially what it's going to be kind of mimic is the tournament sports, because it is now a tournament sport, like basketball, like baseball, both basketballs, baseball, softball. And I think the thing that's going to happen is which is most important? And this is going to be a question that is going to have to be answered over a period of time. Winning your conference championship or getting to the playoffs? We've seen in basketball and baseball, while that's still important, what's the number one thing that fans look for and every coach talks about? Hey, let's get to the tournament, get to the playoff. I suspect that's probably the way football is going to turn out also. And that's going to be a completely different change. Just think of the mindset, particularly of these head football coaches that have been around a long time. You know, hey, it's win the conference, win the conference, win the conference. If you're a Tennessee team, if you are a SEC team, get to the Sugar Bowl. If you're a Big Ten team, get to the Rose Bowl. That's no longer true anymore. It's get to the playoffs. And we know this, there's probably going to be at least three teams from both those leagues get in. So going to be some opportunities there without question.
Yeah, well, what this is also going to do as a head coach, it's going to be the way you – it's going to be how you play your players and when you play your players, and strategically, you know, looking down the road at your schedule and figuring out that, because you're going to be able to get into this tournament with two losses. I mean, that's going to happen. You're going to be able to do that. But now what you're going to have to do is be able to start strategically work around injuries during the season and – to get to the tournament, and that those things are all going to come into play now as to where before they really didn't.
I'm curious, do you think that the 12-team playoff makes it more likely that we see upsets during the season from this standpoint? If you're Georgia, if you're Alabama, if you're Ohio State, you know, coaches had to do whatever possible to motivate their kids to understand we have to keep playing. We can't slip up. Well, now the players are not dumb. They understand the situation. A Georgia, an Alabama, an Ohio State, they might slip up and still get in the tournament. Do you see that possibility as there?
I don't think it's going to be really any different from that standpoint. I can't imagine any coach is going to coach other than, hey, we're going to go out and win this ball game. Now, the good thing is that after you lose a game, if you do lose one, and most of the teams are going to, now a coach can come in and say, okay, hey, we're still on track here. Let's put that one behind us and let's get the next one. That, I think, will be the big coaching change in that, is the fact, just like Max said, if you lose two games in the Big Ten or in the Southeastern Conference, if you end at the end of the year 10-2, you're going to get in the playoffs, and there's probably going to be some three-loss teams in there. So that will be the big change in how head coaches navigate that with their team. Those are the ones that are going to be successful.
How they navigate that mindset and how they navigate the injuries in a season. I just started talking about the grind. These games are going to be played now at a really, really high level throughout the season just because of who you're playing now.
So you're talking, Dave, in a sense, about the deployment of resources and how coaches make decisions knowing that there could be extra ball games added on the end of the season.
No, that's 100% correct. I mean, you're looking now, and you might be looking at a schedule out ahead. If you've got a team that can project that you think you can get into the tournament and then advance through the tournament through the various rounds, it absolutely makes a difference. And the coaches that have thought this far ahead are going to be ahead, just like the coaches that thought far ahead on NIL, coaches thought far ahead on the transfer portal. This is not something you can just do in a vacuum.
Top eight teams, too. We're talking about a 12-team playoff, but really you want to get in that top eight. Now, that's kind of splitting hairs a little bit. You're going to be happy to get in. But if you're in that top eight, the first four get a first-round bye. Those are going to be conference champions. And then the next four, they get a home game. So while you want to get in, it's kind of like that play-in game in basketball. While you want to get there, those last four teams are going to be going on the road, probably playing in a Tuscaloosa or Athens, Georgia, or Ohio, or your Buckeye Stadium, or Michigan, someplace like that, the Southern Cal area out in there, so the Coliseum. So it's that's, you know, where you want to get in, but you kind of like, you know, you don't want to be a 16 seed getting in like a basketball, if you know what I mean.
Well, and to me, it's going to be very, very fascinating and telling this first time to see how everybody tries to maneuver this new landscape.
Part of that, Dave, is the scheduling model, and we're not going to know that until we get through a first year of it. But if you had to hypothesize, how do you think scheduling is going to play into this? Will it have an impact? Will teams get in because their schedule is packed full of power teams and not, you know, a what we used to call Division I AA kind of teams or lower Power 5 conference teams?
Well, what's going to determine, first of all, is how many ball games you win. Now, that number one. But the other thing that's going to impact this scheduling is the travel time. Think travel time and think time zones that some teams are going to go through. I mean, just look at the ACC. I mean, this year you've got UCLA probably traveling 20,000 miles, and then you go clear down in the same conference. You go all the way down to Virginia that's traveling, and Clemson, they're traveling 5,000 miles. Now, over the course of a season, that makes a big difference. I mean, I think we're in territory right now that people are going to be finding out that there are things that are going to come up that you're going to say, wow, I wish we'd have thought about this earlier. But you still got to win football games. That's the number one thing.
Here's the thing on that too, Larry, is which conference you're in. If you are let's just take the Big 12. We know that the Big 12 champions are going to get in. There's going to be four teams get in. We got four Power 5 conferences, four conference champions get in. Now, and the ACC is the same way, but for a second team to get in from either one of those conferences, they're probably going to have to play, especially the Big 12, because there is no power team in the Big 12 anymore. Oklahoma and Texas have left. What's the strongest team out there now? Maybe TCU, maybe Kansas State, maybe Oklahoma State. So those teams are the ones that are going to have to schedule those non-conference and get a key non-conference win. Again, I'm not talking about the champion, but the second team in both those leagues, you better have a couple of pelts underneath your belt of Power 5 conference schools, because when you go up and you're trying to get in, be one of the teams to get in, and you got a third team from the Southeastern Conference, or a third team from the Big Ten, they're going to have advantage of you because they played better teams than you have.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that standpoint. All right, let's talk about another aspect of the whole 12-team playoff that we're dealing with, and that is, how does it change things for that second pack of teams in a conference? Now, we're not talking about Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia at this point. We're talking Ole Miss. We're talking Penn State, Missouri, Wisconsin. Those teams before, look, it was very, very hard to see a road to make the four. What about now, Doug?
Well, last year, let's just take last year. If we'd had this in place last year, both Ole Miss and Missouri would have been in. Georgia would have been in. There would have been four teams, but simply because of their record. Alabama got in because they won the championship. Georgia only had one loss. And that was, to Alabama. So you look at that standpoint, and then you had Missouri with two losses and Ole Miss with two losses. So the threshold is going to be, if you can get to 9-3 in the Southeastern Conference in the Big Ten, you're going to probably have a 50-50 chance of getting in, because we know, again, at least six of the 12 teams are going to be from those two conferences, and most likely a seventh, and maybe some years an eighth, are going to be from there.
And you're also talking about the weight that, and we're talking about a power index now is what we're talking about the weight of a power index for opponents. And so it's going to be very, very, I think, dynamic, and it's going to be very changing as the season goes along to see how, and those teams that you just talked about, I mean, those are going to be teams that are going to be in the mix, but they're going to have a couple of big wins to be able to stay in the mix.
Dave, let me call on your NFL experience for just a moment, because what we're essentially doing now is we're adding wild card teams, and we have seen in the NFL wild card teams be able to not just win a game, but make it to a championship game. Does it take time for that to happen in college football, or could you see right out of the gates in year one a potential wild card team, quote unquote, make a run at a championship?
I think it'll take time. I think it'll take time because what has happened is All you got to do is look at recruiting classes. Who stacked the best recruiting classes? These recruiting classes, you know, regardless of what the format is for a playoff, they've already been done. They've already been stacked in there. And so, but I believe that you're going to see that in the near future. You really will, because you've got a chance now. Everybody has a chance. And so if you're a guy that's not quite playing as much as you think you should be at one of these schools, but the transfer portal is taking you to one of these fringe places, they get enough of those people. Look what Lane Kiffin's doing down at Ole Miss. Look how many new people he has brought in. So there's a lot of dynamics to this, but I think the first year, you're still going to see the big guys be the big guys. But in the future, I really believe you're going to start seeing the non-big guys kind of come up.
Finally, Doug, on this topic, how does the playoff system change the expectations for fans?
Got to think of it, I believe, as a tournament sport, getting into the tournament. My suspicion, I'm just going to use myself as an example, I'm a fan. If my team gets into the playoffs, I'm happy regardless of what happens, because I know they probably are either going to be 9-3, 10-2, or if they're fortunate enough, maybe win a conference championship on that. So I think that's where we're going to get to on that. Now, that's going to be a big change. But what we're also going to see, we know, because of the change in the division play in the Southeastern Conference, we also know that we're going to lose some of those. You know, is Tennessee and Alabama going to play every year? Is Texas going to play Oklahoma every year? Probably. Or are they going to play Arkansas? Are they going to play A&M? Those things probably are not going to happen. So I think fans now, they're going to, I put myself in that category, those old traditional rivalries, they're probably going to go by the wayside, except maybe for one or two. Now, the good part of it is you're going to renew that rivalry at least every 2 years.
Every National Football League team goes into it saying, we need to play well enough for 17 weeks to get into the tournament. That's the mindset we're going to start seeing.
Tablet, clicker, game film. You're in the coach's meeting. Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy of Forklift Systems. Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, to be successful, you need five-star talent. It's also true for your heavy lifting equipment. Forklift Systems will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and what you need to trade or cut. If you're not constantly improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
We're counting down to the start of the season with the Vols opening up against Chattanooga. Next week, we'll start our breakdown of the Volunteers 2024 season. Today, we're focused on change. That will be the overriding theme of this college football season. There is a lot of it. There are some rule changes that are worth noting this year, including the addition of the two-minute warning in college football. Dave McGinnis, is this simply a television commercial ploy, or will it have an impact on coaching strategy?
Well, it affects the television because it takes away the kickoff. It takes timeout. Go to the kickoff, and then go commercial, and then come back to the game. Because 2 minutes, it is a definite coaching strategy. 2 minutes in the ball game is a coaching strategy that you use. You absolutely do. I've had a lot of experience with it. You use it as an extra timeout. You also use it as being able to formulate what's going to happen as to whether you're receiving or kicking the ball off going into the second half. It's a big strategy thing. It absolutely is. And those coaches in collegiate football that adapt to the strategy part of it during the course of a game. Every game is different in the strategy that you will use approaching the 2 minute, but it is an extra timeout. And there's ways that you can use it to your advantage and to your opponent's disadvantage.
I'm sure. What have these high school college coaches done? They've turned to their pro brethren.
Absolutely.
And said, "Hey, tell us how you utilize, in addition to your three timeouts, how do you utilize that fourth timeout, that 2 minutes before the half?"
I was asked about that on my travels this year. I did several clinics this year, in various places. With collegiate coaches, and I was asked that question because they've already started thinking about it. Not only thinking about it, they've been practicing it.
Helmet communication is now a part of the college football game. Doug, a lot of people have asked, what took so long?
Well, and that is rightfully so. You know, just think about when they started talking about this, and it's been talked about probably for the last 20 years. When they started talking about this, though, I kind of wondered, you see, on the sideline, they got these big drapes that they hold over, the coaches. Well, how about those fans on rows 3, 4, and 5 are trying to watch the ball game? Or, you see them trying to figure out, read lips from across the field. Why not do this? It was because of money, not for the bigger programs, but for the smaller programs. Long time coming. Now, exactly how it's going to work, Dave McGinnis knows. He's worked in that world a lot of times. I tell you what is interesting, though, and I'll just relate one story to you from Tennessee. They're going to do both. They're going to signal plays in, and they're also going to use the helmet communication. Not in the same play, but they're not going to go strongly one way, especially on offense. Just think about this, and there's a couple other teams that do this too. The reason that they're not going to verbalize the play in is because it takes longer than it does to signal it in for all the players to get it and run the play. So fast-paced offenses, I think probably Ole Miss will probably do some of the same thing. But Mac knows a lot more about the helmet communication. And, Mac, let me just throw this to you, because when we think about helmet communication, what do we think about? We think about the offensive play caller sending the quarterback. We also have the same thing on the defensive side that we don't discuss quite as much.
But I was asked about this too, and I went through it. I experienced both in my National Football League career, because in the National Football League, the offense had it years before the defense ever had it. The offense had it for years, and the defense was still doing hand signals or doing wristbands, those types of things. Now, what it allows you to do, and I would assume that they're going to have the cutoff point on the play clock, just like they do in the National Football League, to 15 seconds.
That's true.
They're going to have the cutoff point to 15 seconds. But what it does allow you to do, let me start with defense first. First thing it allows you to do is to get the personnel to your signal caller really quick. Because you get your personnel to them really quick, and then according to your game plan, you know what to expect. Because with that, once you've practiced enough, you know if they say this is 11 personnel coming into the game, they know who's coming in the game defensively, and so that really helps a lot. And then you can roll through the defense pretty quickly. Offensively, what you could do, and guys have gotten very good with this, the offensive coordinators, is being able to take that down right to that 15-second mark. So as a defense, what we learned to do was our signal caller would hold and look at that play clock to see when it was coming down, as to when we knew that the communication was cut off before we started moving and bogeying and moving around. There's a lot to it. But I'm happy about this, because I think having both sides of the ball be able to get it at the same time is much more fair than what happened in the National Football League, as to where the offense for years had it, and the defense was still sending smoke signals in.
How much can a coach really help a quarterback with that communication device?
Well, he quite a bit. This is two deep, third, three, and he can say a coach studies film a lot longer than players do. Let's just say that, unless you've got a Peyton Manning, and those guys are exceptional, and you'd be talking to him, say, hey, this is what we worked on. They're showing two deep, but they're going to be in three deep here. So let's get a little motion and see who twitches and who moves, and then you'll know what route to throw. You can say all of that before the 15 seconds comes in. But you don't want to feel – I know this. I've had defensive players say, just don't talk to me too much, because defensively it's a little bit different, because you are trying to get set up and trying to look and see what's coming at you and try to get reactive. The offense controls the pace of what's going on. And so you can get quite a bit done in there depending on how well you and the quarterback are synced up during the week with what you're seeing and what the code words are you're going to use.
Let's just go back last year. Remember when Josh Dobbs was traded to
there you go,
to Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, and to Minnesota.
Traded to Minnesota, and the coach said afterwards that not only did he signal him the play and call the play into him, he was telling him which defensive back to run, because he hadn't been there to run the play. So there's a lot of things you can do on that.
There absolutely is, and it's incumbent upon the coach and the quarterback to get together, you know, quite a bit before. To be able to get it, but there is quite a bit you can do if you know what you're doing.
Here's another part of this, and you guys always talk about unintended consequences. One of the things that you have to prepare for, Dave, and this is more on defense than even on offense, is what happens if that guy who has the helmet communication, what happens if he's injured, and how do you deal with that?
You always have three helmets set up. Always have three people set up. The quarterbacks, you know, most people have three quarterbacks. And then on defense, you've got your equipment people. You're ready with three different people. If you're playing a middle linebacker first and second down, you can only have one green dot on the field at a time. But if you're playing a linebacker first and second down, and then your nickel linebacker is your signal caller, he's also got a green dot helmet too. So you can have multiple helmets set up. You can only have one on the field at the same time.
But that's something coaches haven't been used to in college football. So another thing you have to kind of keep in the back of your mind.
Many of the college coaches were not able to use it because there was not enough helmets out there in spring. They didn't have the helmets. The company that makes them didn't have the helmets to give it to them. Now, I'm talking about the biggest universities out there. So they didn't really get started on it until the helmets were produced after spring practice going into fall practice.
Let's go another layer of this onion, and let me tell you who this is on. The onus of this is on your equipment people, because they've got to change during the game sometimes. So those guys have got to be, they've got to be spot on as how to do that. I've lived that life.
Here's another change. Tablets will be allowed on the sidelines this year. Doug, you would have liked to have had a tablet maybe?
I probably would not have, you know. They asked Coach Heupel that in a press conference this week, and he said, was he concerned about that with the players? He said, I'm not concerned with the players. He said, but I'm concerned with my coaches, because they don't know how to use them. Very smart. They're finally catching up with the technology part of it. But again, a lot of these technological issues were not allowed for the bigger schools to have, because the smaller schools couldn't afford to do all that. But that's gone now. You can look there. You cannot. I'm assuming it's the same way in the NFL. Dave will let us know. But you can't. It's got to be to that singular tablet. You can't have it hooked up to a TV screen on the sideline and everybody watch it. I think it's going to benefit probably coaches much more than it will the players. Interestingly enough, the high schools have been able to do it. I know the high schools here in Middle Tennessee, all of them have been able to do it, and the college coaches have not been able to use it until this year.
I absolutely loved it. When it came in, I mean, I was a huge proponent. When I was working for Jeff Fisher, he was on the competition committee, and we tried it. I absolutely loved it. It's a game changer. Again, I've coached long enough as to when, you know, we used to have somebody in the press box taking a Polaroid and running it down to the sideline to be able to try to make it out on a black and white Polaroid exactly what the gaps were and where. This is a game changer, I promise you. And let me just say this. The players, in this day and age, they are so used to living on those tablets. And so, I mean, they can flip and file through that. And coaches learn it pretty quick, too. But they're going to, a lot of the coaches, they're going to have to take a little bit of seminars. But I absolutely embraced it and loved it. There's nobody that's using it that doesn't like it. I promise you.
Downside of it is that it's putting a lot of the old grease board companies out of business.
And no more fax machines to the sidelines either. That was something that happened early in my NFL career. One other change, and this happened more off the field, but Doug, more coaches on your staff can now coach. Do you like this change?
Oh, I absolutely love it. And but not because it's going to help the, although it will some, it's not because it's going to help the coaches, but what it does, it gives you more entry positions to be able to get into coaching. Used to have to be a grad assistant. Well, nobody went to grad school. That was just, you could have four of them. Mac might have gone to grad school, but TCU is a pretty easy place to get out of, so I don't count that one. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, it never made a whole lot of sense to me to not let young people, and it's going to be primarily used for young coaches, the analyst part of maybe some of the older coaches, but it's to bring these younger coaches in, let them learn. And I could have never have been a college coach if it hadn't been for grad assistants. I'd have been a high school coach or middle school coach maybe. So I will say this. I think one of the things that this new president has done, Charlie Becker, he has brought common sense to the NCAA, and this was just a common sense. You didn't have to think a whole lot about this. And to long way of answering your question, Larry, I think it's absolutely wonderful.
Let me add just something to that. Not only the young coaches, but some of these analysts are experienced coaches. You can't manufacture experience, and you know who's going to benefit from that? The young coaches and the players. Now the players can ask these guys legally for help. And that, to me, I think it made no sense why they couldn't do it before.
And Max certainly knows. Gary Patterson's a great example of that. Head coach for, 25, 30 years at TCU? He was on the Baylor staff as an analyst. I think he's moved on since then.
He went to Texas first as an analyst, then to Baylor. I mean, to me, it just makes so much more common sense that's what you have to do.
Larry, let me tell you one thing that's coming, though, because of this. And this is going to be a game changer for assistant coaches. Let me tell you what's coming down the pipe. They're going to go. Everything's kind of going to the pro model anyway. One of the things that has not been college coaches have had to do that pro coaches did not do. They had to also do the scouting and the recruiting. What you're going to see is now you're going to see a separate. We'll eventually get to it. It's a few years. A separate recruiting staff like a pro scouting group, where the coaches. On the field coaches can be there coaching, and you have another group that are out doing the recruiting during season. So that's going to be a big change that will be coming, and it'll be brought about because of the number of people that you're allowed to have now.
The colleges are going to personnel departments is what we're talking about now. It's 100% true.
Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, this is Coach to Coach. Our coaches are ready with lessons, X's and O's, and insight.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on, just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Get set.
The Summer Games record for the women's 100-meter dash is 10.49 seconds. Meanwhile, you got pretty winded walking in from the mailbox this morning. But don't worry, you may not bring home the gold, but that doesn't mean you can't win a little green with Instant Games from the Tennessee Lottery. So unlock your inner winner today and play Instant Games for your chance to win gold. I mean, cold hard cash. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
Our coach-to-coach analysis of the changes in college football continues. Next week, we'll get into some pure X's and O's. But one of the big changes is an absence. Nick Saban will no longer walk the sidelines at Alabama as head coach. When you look at Nick Saban's accomplishments, what amazes you most?
Consistency and consistent excellence. Consistent excellence. I've known many guys that have coached for him. I know guys that have been his right-hand people. He had a system and he stuck to it, and it takes a lot of discipline to stay with your system year in and year out, year in and year out. Anybody that came into Alabama in any capacity adhered to that system. I mean, it's legendary that you got a thick notebook with dividers, and here's how we do it. The consistent excellency that he portrayed in the toughest conference in the country, I think, is unmatched as to what's going on in college football. I mean, to me, that is one of the – it's going to be hard to ever duplicate that.
I think the most impressive thing to me is the way that over an extended period of time, 12, 15, 20 years, he was able to keep that edge. You know, human nature is, after you've had some success, maybe after he had won his fourth national championship, maybe you let off a little bit the pedal. Not him. Like Mac, I've had about six or seven guys that I coached with that coached with him afterwards all said the same thing. You know exactly what you're going to be doing every minute of the day. And not only do you know what you're going to be doing, the head football coach knows what you're going to be doing. But the biggest thing to me was, never a letdown. Never a, you know, I think I'm going to take a couple of weeks off and go do this. You know, that is what is impressive. I don't see, you know, you don't ever want to say never, because quite honestly, in my era, we had Bear Bryant. I never thought anybody would do what Bear Bryant did. Nick Saban did it plus.
What is the biggest challenge, Doug, of replacing the man?
I think without question, Kevin, it's an opportunity. You know, it depends on how you look at it. Kevin DeBoer is going to have is the fact that how do you measure up? How do you continue the quote process that Nick Saban had there with those players? The recruiting, it looks like, by the way, early indications, he's got a top one or two class right now going in. I will say this for Kevin DeBoer, though. If I would have been at Washington and had the success that he's had, hey, the guy was in the national championship game last year and decides to leave and follow a legend. He's got some confidence that he's going to be able to do it. But I think the biggest thing is just there. If you had to list all the reasons why you wouldn't want to follow Nick Saban, it would be a very long list, but he's decided to do it. You know, he's had tremendous success. I think he's only lost like 8 or 9 games in his whole career. He's been coaching 15 years or so.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer, what he's done, he was ready to accept this. And I think something very unique. We talk about how unique Nick Saban was. Nick Saban is still there in the building. He is still there. And by all indications, he has stepped aside, but he's there. And to me, for Kalen DeBoer going into it, to be able to have him there as a sounding board that has no other agenda other than to see Alabama continue the excellence that he built, that's a huge plus for Kalen DeBoer.
I think we all know this, though. Now, from a fan's perspective, the first time that something happens that didn't go quite the way it's going to be, you know, I don't think Coach Saban would have done that. That's when we're going to find out about Kevin DeBoer.
And how do you deal with that? I mean, how do you deal with that if you're Kevin DeBoer?
Well, you got to really shut it out and block it out. And that is difficult to do, but it's going to happen. Hey, they're not going to continue to win 12 games every year.
You know, I saw this whole dynamic on a different, on a level that's probably a little bit smaller, but it's similar in the fact that when Bill Snyder retired at Kansas State after resurrecting that program and they brought somebody else in, it didn't start going very well. Bill Snyder had an office right there, and pretty soon Bill Snyder's back in that office. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but he was there to be able to help. But it, when you're a coach, and your opportunity comes, you've got to decide, do I want to step up to this knowing what I am following? But you still got to be able. And I think Kalen DeBoer, and I don't know him, but I've kind of watched him. If you're comfortable in your own skin, you've got to have the confidence that you know what you're doing.
I will say this, and I know that Coach DeBoer has said all the right things on this, but I don't know many coaches that would want Nick Saban to still be at that university. And I don't think he's in the building. I do think his office is going to be down the stadium, but he's going to be close enough. And, you know, you got to say, yeah, I'm glad to have him around. I'm not so sure about that because
I forget coaches, Doug. I don't think anybody in any profession would like that to be the case.
Exactly. I mean, you know, but hey, that's the way it is. And one thing I do want to say about Coach Saban, though, I hope people will tune in and listen to his analysis on college football this year. Nobody, I've been around a long time. I think Mac may agree with me. If he won't, he'll tell me this. I don't know. When Nick Saban explains something, Doug Matthews is going to be listening to it because he explained, and you say, man, you know what? I never thought about that. It's right. You take guys like him and Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells, when those guys talk, you better listen to them because they know what they're talking about.
Get inside the huddle. McGinnis, Matthews, and you. Coach to coach. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a ride share. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
We continue our march toward the start of the 2024 college football season on Coach to Coach. Doug, we will break down the Vols in depth over the next 2 weeks as we get ready for the opener with Chattanooga. But as you have seen them in camp so far this fall, How do you assess it?
Seeing a scrimmage, a couple of practices, there is no question in my mind this will be the most athletic team that Coach Heupel has had going into his fourth year, especially on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of reasons for that, but the fact of the matter is they are going to be very athletic. He has a great mix of older players. They got fifth and sixth year players, offensive linemen. They got 5 fifth and sixth year players on the defensive side. So he has an excellent mix of veterans and guys that have been down there soaking that are getting ready to play right now. Going to get down to this, though, Larry. He's got a redshirt freshman quarterback that is the most skilled football player in the 45 years that I've been following Tennessee football, skilled quarterback. Not going to say he's the best one, but he is the most skilled. How Nico plays is going to have a big factor in how this team does. But they're going to be better on defense. I think they're going to be more dynamic and speed on defense than they were last year. But the whole thing on that goes is I'm not sure how good some of these teams are that I think are pretty darn good Tennessee's going to be playing. Tennessee's going to be better, no doubt about that.
Couple of question marks. What concerns you at this point in your way as a coach?
The depth problem on the offensive line. But having said that, Coach Heupel only plays like five. There were four or five games last year where he only played five offensive linemen the whole time. That and then just the first six players that played in the secondary last year, five of them left either by graduation or transfer or going to the pros. And the one returning starter was hurt in the first scrimmage, and he's gone for the year. So they've got all five of those starting positions, their backups, are players that have not played much up there. Now, three of them are transfers. They're longer. They're more athletic. They can run. The one thing that Coach Tim Banks is going to be able to do this year that he has not been able to do in his first 3 years is play man coverage. And they have a lot of what look like really good man coverage guys. So, but that would be my biggest concern. Other than that, defensive front, strong. Offensive line starters are good. Good skill receivers, the best overall group of receivers. They got probably six guys that can play there. But again, quarterback, obviously, but then that secondary would be, and I'd feel really good about it.
This show has been all about change, and we've covered a lot of ground. But look at what might be ahead. Scholarship changes, players as employees, further realignment, maybe a group of 50 teams, maybe more teams in the postseason. Dave, as you look at all of those types of things that potentially lie ahead, what could change the game of football even more?
Football separating itself from anything else that's going on athletically in the universities. 50 teams, or maybe not quite that many, but football moving to be a separate entity from the other intercollegiate athletics, that to me would be seismic.
In football alone, if you as a university are not going to be willing to allot $20 to $25 million a year to name, image, likeness, you might as well go do something else because you're going to get run over like with a dump truck. So how many of these teams are going to be able to do it? Is Vanderbilt going to be willing to do that? I'm not saying they are or they aren't. Northwestern, Duke. My suspicion is some of these teams are going to say, hey, instead of putting our money into football, let's put it into our other sports. Have a good football program, but put them into other sports that we can excel in. They really don't have a chance to compete for the playoffs year in and year out.
Coach to coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Podcast the show now and catch up before kickoff, where you find podcasts. Coach to coach.